And you watch the mainstream media and you see the neglect of what's happening. You see the neglect of this country with regard to its complicity in Gaza, except amongst a few. Medea Benjamin, Doctors Against Genocide, 15,000 physicians and other medical personnel together to protest. That's it. You could stir the opposition, if you will, with a stick. It's just so small and no mainstream media coverage of it at all to speak of. It's a travesty. It's tragic and it's a travesty, but it's the way the world works with regard to U.S. Israel, Israel, U.S. But this guy who knows Israel better than I, he said, no, you're wrong. They all were Zionists, radical Zionists to the core from 1948 on. I couldn't argue with him other than to say what I had heard and seen with Yitzhak Rabin and seen with Powell when we were doing the negotiations we were still doing. And when we met with Arafat in 2002, as I recall, we saw a willing Palestinian partner finally, and one who had been screwed by Bill Clinton and Dennis Ross and Madeleine Albright, screwed, absolutely screwed, because Ehud Barak and everybody, including Clinton and Ross and all those double citizens, wanted them to be screwed. They did not want a peace agreement. So I don't know what the truth is. Is there a peace movement left in Israel that's effective or could be effective, or to take, you know, some sort of motivation from this crisis and get back into political power? I don't know. I doubt it. This guy was really convincing. You don't think that will change the complexion of Likud, and particularly this extreme right wing of Likud, but it may ultimately lead to the unraveling of their worst plans. I've seen this happen before. I had an argument with a gentleman the other day because he knows Israel better than I, but he made this statement, bald-faced statement, that there had never been even a Labor Party movement that was genuinely interested in peace. And of course, I immediately went to the leader of that movement that I know the most about, both from my New York Jewish friends and from my own study of the history of Israel. And that was Yitzhak Rabin, who as a young man was an ardent Zionist, almost as bad as Bibi Netanyahu, and who, as he said to one rabbi in New York City when he visited later as an older man, right before I think he had become prime minister, he said, I've seen the light. There is no way we will ever give Jewish people in the Levant a safe haven without peace with the Palestinians. And so I'm willing to go there. Bibi then orchestrated his assassination. And yes, at that point, it terminated the peace movement in Israel, period. Terminated Labor Party, period. I mean, really, for all practical purposes, and those are the only purposes that matter here. Very worrisome part of his portfolio is the fact that he's not sure which transaction is which when he gets ready to do his transactional diplomacy. And let's look at something else. I just read an article by a very reputable political scientist in the United States, cover to cover, 10 pages, in a very distinguished journal. And there was not a single word about Gaza. Ukraine galore, pictures all through the thing of the Davos, of the crowd, of the G7, of the G20, all this stuff. This is a very established writer, a very established professorial authority, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, former member of the policy planning staff at state, and not a single word. Go back and look at the New York Times, read the feature articles and see if they even talked about Gaza, from what dimension they talked about it. The dimension is Israel. Look at the euphoria right now over hostages being returned. No weeping and gnashing of teeth, let alone even reporting of tens of thousands of casualties every month in Palestine. Not a bit, not an iota. And yet, here's all this. Hogwash, Mr. President. Where have you been for the last 15 months? In fact, where have you been for the last 4 years? It is our war. We provided the bombs, the bullets, the artillery rounds, the JP-8 to fuel their fighters. We provided everything. We are as guilty of killing, I think, more than 100,000, maybe 150,000 Palestinians, 50% of whom are women and children, and 50% of those children under the age of 12. I've just been again with Doctors Against Genocide, who've been in Rafah, in other places in Gaza, treating these children. So, Donald, we did this. Very weak start, Donald. And I suspect that leadership will be no different from what it was before, a combination of Hamas and perhaps some of the other groups that have joined Hamas in the opposition. And that'll be the reality. And that'll be the reality that makes Bibi say, "See, I told you, I told you, I'm back in again." And there's no question in my mind, anyway, that phase two probably won't start. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I pray I'm wrong. But I suspect that they'll foul it even up before phase two has a chance to start because they want Gaza to be Israeli. That's the way that group, that Zionist group, that radical Zionist group, feels Israel can be saved. And that's the only way. And Donald Trump talking about it being a beautiful place where he could build hotels and sun himself on the beach with a mint julep in his hand and all that. You know, whom are you doing that with? I suspect Miriam Adelson told him it'll be with Israelis that you're doing that. That's one of the things that fascinated me when we were getting the 2012, 2013 reports from the Swedes and the Finns and the Swiss, who had put observers on Russian maneuver battlefields, so to speak, simulated battlefields in those years. And these were big maneuvers. These were what we would call in the US corps-sized maneuvers, you know, 30, 40,000 troops. Was the Israelis were in there big time, helping them learn how to coordinate drones with their ISR assets and such, helping them to learn how to coordinate that massive amount of troops in a specific set of terrain with different kinds of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, ISR. So the Israelis are in anywhere they can make money. That's the bottom line for the Israelis. They're anywhere they can make money. And it doesn't matter about the law. If the law contravenes it, they just break the law. Just like we do, selling arms to Israel. We've been breaking our own law all along here, selling arms to Israel. I know, I was there. I was in political military affairs with Link Bloomfield when he was Assistant Secretary of State. And we were looking at the laws and telling the Israelis and the Marshes, that's about all we did, you know, official diplomatic notes, that they shouldn't use Apache helicopters to kill little girls and things like that. It didn't make any difference. We've broken all the laws with Tony Blinken in there. He's a war criminal. Blinken is a war criminal, no question in my mind. Were the world a fair place, were justice to be administered, Blinken would be in the dock along with Netanyahu, Smotrich, Gallant, and the rest of those people. But it won't happen. It won't happen. But that's the gist of what we're doing. Ema, you have no idea how many times I've heard words like those just spoken by the Qatari from others in the Middle East, Arabs, all. Doesn't matter. That's the approach. That's the way they're going to talk. That's what they're going to say. But they're ultimately going to deal. And Trump knows that. He knows that. Is there going to have to be some pro forma statement that eventually we'll have a two-state solution and the Palestinians will have a place of their own? Is there even going to be a definitive geographic location of that state, or is it going to be in Aceh province, Indonesia? We don't know. But I guarantee you, I've heard that before, Nima. I've heard it to it makes me sick to hear it again. And it doesn't mean anything if it's in their interest to do otherwise. And almost certainly it will be in their interest to do otherwise. So this has been a really desperately bad experience for the Israeli Defense Force and for the Jewish apartheid state of Israel, and by extension, for the United States. And now we're going to expect people like this real estate magnate from New York and Donald Trump, another real estate magnate. We're going to expect them, just as we're going to expect someone like General Kellogg, who I just learned the other day was 80 years old, my age, you know, to fix. It isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen. So we're already off to the races with Trump. I mean, we're off to the races domestically with all the executive orders he issued, people he's fired. He just fired the commandant of the Coast Guard because she's a woman. I suppose Pete Hegseth asked him to do that. He just fired her. And we can see, we're going to see a lot more of this. Oh, by the way, if they don't pass a budget by the end of March, Israeli law requires they have an election. So, yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how this is accomplished, especially since his coalition is fraying even as I speak. But I guarantee you that if Donald Trump doesn't get his wishes and violate the Constitution and have another term yet, the next president will pay dearly for that because Iran will have a nuclear weapon and it will be very blatantly tested and shown off. I mean, that's the reality of it. You simply cannot destroy their nuclear program with air power alone. An argument ever since air power was invented that has never proved sound, and it will prove unsound again. It will not destroy their nuclear program. So I'm hoping, I'm praying that the saner voices in the Pentagon, even with Hegseth there saying, I, sir, three bags full, the saner voices in uniform will tell Donald Trump the truth about this situation in Iran. So I don't even think Donald Trump would be foolish enough. Now, I'm going out on a limb here. I don't even think he would be foolish enough to believe, one, that Israel could destroy Iran's nuclear program itself all alone, or two, that the United States joining in only with air power could do it. If he's convinced that that's not true, in other words, that it can be done by one or the other or both combined, then he's a fool and he's got to get rid of his military advisors afterwards or he'll really be in trouble, because then we're at war. And we're going to discover that we have to go on the ground to do that war to ensure anything about Israel or about Iran's nuclear program. Now, there would be the possibility that we could do all that or part of it and then declare we've destroyed their nuclear program. But I think he's going to have to make a decision on that. I think he's leaning heavily towards Fortress America. But then what does that mean? What does Fortress America mean? Does it mean the Western Hemisphere with a fence like he's going to finish building with respect to Mexico? And oh, by the way, if you're doing a fence in the Atlantic, why are you doing one on the southern border? And if you're going to take Panama, you need to get through that fence to go down there and take Panama. And if you're going to take Canada, you probably don't need to be talking the way he's talking now about fortifying the Canadian border with the Canadians of all things. So it's crazy. I don't know what he's aiming at. I really don't. And I wish he'd make up his mind. And what happens is the administration in power contaminates the administration coming in. So I think you're seeing some of that. They convert you, if you will. And so you're seeing some of that. But you're also seeing, and I think it came out in that interview you just displayed some portions of, uncertainty. Uncertainty that they're masking with the kind of bravado talk that, Russia's losing. By the way, you got the stats wrong completely. Ukraine is still standing up, but it's got to end because this is stupid. It's gone on to good characterization of the conflict in the general sense that it needs to stop because people are dying. But it doesn't take into consideration what the transition team probably told him too, that he's not revealing. And that is that he feels now, at least partially, that this is integral to the preservation of the American empire, whether that empire is constituted on this side of the Atlantic, Fortress America, or it's constituted all across the globe, the standard America, the America of the last 20 years in particular. And he's conflicted over that. Here's a piece, and this is classic. This is from a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, from a member of the policy planning staff in the past, who's now a Princeton professor. And this is what he says in the opening of his article entitled America at a Global Crossroads. Like the title, because we definitely are. The U.S., polarized and divided, faces a world overflowing with challenges, dangers, and uncertainty. Good sentence. but I appended to it these words, mostly of our own making. Then he goes on and he says, China and Russia have stepped forward to challenge American leadership and the Western-centered international order. And then I write down below, no, the American empire has stepped forward to arrest the irresistible shift of power to the East. So he's got it right throughout the article, basically in terms of the challenge, but he's got the reasons for that challenge utterly backward. And that means bad policy. And that's what we're doing.